The Tathagata's words.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
How lovely to see you all. And a very great thank you to Mior, Reverend Mior, for inviting me to speak here. As some of you know, this is my favourite temple. And especially due to its founding by Isan Dorsey. And also, I first learnt the ropes of priesthood here with dear friend John King. So I dedicate the talk to John and to Isan, and also my teacher, Zenke Blanchard. First of all, the question of the moment is, what happened to your knee? And the answer of the moment is, I have no idea. It simply kind of blew out yesterday or the day before. Both knees have been operated on. I was a field hockey goalkeeper for 20 years, so both of them are quite in interesting conditions. But anywho, not to worry. As you can see, it's actually a good way of teaching, because people in the last couple of days have been saying, oh, how awful, oh, that's just dreadful, oh, how terrible. And I say, well, no, it's just the knee's got something going on with it. And actually, it doesn't make me feel unhappy or distressed or anything like that. I'm a bit puzzled because I don't really know what's going on, but it's not upsetting. And I think this is actually one of the benefits of practice, to have something occur and let that just be what it is. My teacher always talks about things as they is, just things as they are. So just to let be what is, in a way we're talking about acceptance, but some folks, when you say acceptance, have a hard time with that idea, because they think it implies approval. Now, I don't approve of the fact that my knee has gone kablooey, but I do accept it. So acceptance is a very, very important part of being able to deal with what goes on a daily basis. So recently with I have two sanghas that I work with now, and recently we've started in the Zenke Sangha, named after my teacher. It means inconceivable joy. Just the other week we started a class on the Heart Sutra on a Monday night at Glide Church, and unfortunately it's full up already. That room we use only holds about 16 people, so I think we're full up at the moment. But it was very interesting, because when you look at the Heart Sutra, the very first two or three lines, as is the case in many sutras, kind of give the whole game away. We only got to the first two or three lines last week, but in reality, if we could realize what those first few words are talking about, then we can simply apply it to every other phenomena that we meet in life. And strangely, when I was looking into this week, I keep ending up with the Tibetans. I don't know why, but I can highly recommend these two books. Of course, Thich Nhat Hanh, who always has such wonderful things to say, The Heart of the Buddha's Teaching. So I would highly recommend this one. And also Geshe Gelsang Gyatso, The Heart of Wisdom. Now, it's slightly different from our own training, but there's nothing really out. Everything, actually, I would say, is included in our Buddhist practice. In fact, a few weeks ago, I was teaching at the Shambhala Meditation Center, And we were talking about how Buddhists, we separate off a lot, and we have this Sangha and that Sangha, and this Sangha's for this kind of folks and that Sangha's for that kind of folks. And we actually came up with the idea of having a Maha Sangha, which would actually include all kinds of Buddhism and all kinds of people, which I think might be a wee bit in line with the Buddhist teaching, I'm not sure. But anywho, I tend to make no discrimination between the different schools, and the way these two folks write about the phenomena of form and emptiness is quite wonderful. So perhaps someone might be able to recite the first few lines for us. Well, I will, because you're the only one with your hand up. This is Anne-Marie, Zenkei Sangha. Yeah.
Avalokiteshvara, when deeply practicing Prajna Paramita, clearly saw that all five aggregates are empty and thus relieved all suffering. Shariputra, form does not differ from emptiness. Emptiness does not differ from form. Form itself is emptiness. Emptiness itself is form.
That's it. Thank you. Thank you so much. So, right there, just those few lines. Just those few lines. And of course, the most important part there is form is emptiness, emptiness is form. Everything that comes after those few lines is an expansion of those concepts, those ideas, those teachings. And of course, Avalokiteshvara spotted that all five skandhas, or five aggregates in their own being, are empty. So it's a very, very simple topic today, I believe. Form is emptiness, emptiness is form. If we can simply perceive that, realize that, embody that, in all the teachings it says this is the end of our suffering. This is how to put an end to our suffering. If we remember the Four Noble Truths, the first one is that there is suffering. Or in the Scottish version, it's always something. And then the second noble truth is the cause of suffering. And who knows the cause of suffering?
Clinging or thirst.
Clinging
or thirst.
Now, what are we clinging to?
Some idea of the self, I believe.
Some idea of the self, probably. So, there's a great place if we could just apply our form as emptiness, emptiness as form, to that very first part, the five skandhas, form, feeling, perception, formation, consciousness. But let's just stick with the first one. This is the simple one, the simple teaching today, the very first one. So form, and we said that we're busy clinging to the self, basically, our idea of the self. So there's our very first form, our idea of ourself, this body we could see as our great manifestation of form. Oh, or we could look at this chair as a manifestation of form, or indeed this table as a manifestation of form. In fact, Cheryl is a manifestation of form, and crutches, and of course everything we can perceive as a manifestation of form. But the part that's interesting is, how do we see the emptiness of the form? Now, the table, of course, is a really great example to look at emptiness of form. If I took these four things we call legs off this, what we call a table, and put the legs over here, and put the top down here, where did the table go? Where is the table? So there we immediately can see the non-existence, or the non-inherent existence, of the table. Of course, there is a table, but it's not permanent, and it's interconnected. If we take parts of it away, the table is no longer to be seen. Now that might be quite simple to understand. But can we apply that to this? This body sitting here that we think of as so solid, so permanent. And of course, again, going back to the noble truths, here, right here, is the cause of our suffering. This attachment to making this body happy, giving this body what it wants. Things have to be the right way for this body. This body's got it right. Or has it? We're so obsessed, so concerned, so self-concerned, so concerned with this body. So it's actually very useful to have a look at that. Now, of course, the best place to have a look is in Zazen. But we can do it right now. We can, for example, let's take, for example, Glenn here in the front. Now, Glenn's sitting there. We can all see Glenn. And so we think Glenn has a body. So I'm just going to ask Glenn to point to his body. Okay. So your body, you started here with the,
right.
The head. Okay, so that this is your body. So the head is the body.
Part of it.
So see here, we've got a body part. We have a body part. Here's our head, so that's a body part. Then you went here, shoulders, another body part.
Right.
And you're using your hands, so you've got another body part, and you went down your legs, so then we've got legs as body parts. So we have all these body parts. Right. So then we think, well, we've found all the parts. Right, so that means that I have a body. But first of all, you started with the head. So the head is a part of the body, but it's not the complete body. So head is not body. Right? Following me here? Your head is not your body. Part of your body. Your hands, not the body, but part of the body. So we have the not body, we have the not body, we have the legs that are also not the whole body, just part. So basically we have not body all over the place. Not body, not body, not body. All simply parts of body. But then if we take that the logical step, if my hands are part of my body, but I just said that these are not my body, so I'm saying that my body is composed of all these parts that are not body. So, do we actually have a body? Can anyone now just show me their body, convince me of the fact that they actually have a body that is independently existing, not connected to other things, permanent? Could anyone show me that body? It's a real question, real question. Now, what was that you showed me? But that's just part. And we know that the parts are not the whole. Now, this might seem like a... Good. Interesting. So is this is your whole body that you're demonstrating?
That's all I have today for you.
That's all I have, exactly. Thank you so much. Of course, he has adequately demonstrated that we impute correctly from these different parts that there is something here. Thank you so much. We impute correctly. But most of the time we don't actually impute correctly. For example, we're moving into, we've had the form here, the feelings. Let's just look at this as a process. The form, the body, now we're not too convinced that we have that. The feelings, you can come back if you like. Unless this is too upsetting. The feelings usually connected with the form, which we can again see in Zazen. Something arises, and it said the first thing we do is aversion or clinging. Very rarely neutral, which is, of course, rather what we're working on. So then we have our perceptions of this perhaps existent or non-existent body. So forms, feels, perception, that perception's an interesting one. I'm sure a lot of people know the stick or snake story, where someone's walking along through the woods and there on the path in front of them is something. And their first perception is, oh, it's a snake. Which you can see the process again, perception, feeling, it's a snake. So everything comes from the idea that that form is a snake. And then when we get closer and we see it's just a stick, all of the fear and so forth can go. Perception, very, very based on everything around it. Another one of those phenomena that isn't actually, it's all dependent, isn't it? We perceive that stick as a snake, fear arose, so our perception gave us that fear. And we can come back to what we're working on originally, it's our perceptions of what's happening to us, with us, around us, that cause us to have those emotional reactions. So we have the form, leads to the feelings, leads to the perceptions. Of course, another great perception story is the empty boat. I'm sure a lot of people know the empty boat story. There's a man rowing along on the lake, na 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 na, and suddenly this other boat comes up and smashes right into him. And he jumps up, you idiot, why did you row your boat right into my boat? Why did you do that? And then he looks and the other boat is empty. Another wonderful story about the emptiness of our perceptions and the way that we continually react to them. So we've had form, feelings, perceptions, mental formations. The person in that boat was an idiot. I had a whole set of things ready to say, everything was all set to go, to say to that idiot in that boat, but once again, what do we find? We find emptiness. And we end up, of course, the fifth skanda, or the fifth aggregate, consciousness. Well, we can see how all of these things that have happened before, from looking at the stick or looking at the robot, all the way up to deciding that's how things are. We've developed our complete consciousness around how things are. So it's rather like building blocks. It's a simple process. And of course, you don't have to believe a word I'm saying. The Buddha always said, taste it for yourself. So the next time you're sitting, in fact, you could do it right now if you wanted to, you could watch what arises and see, can you leave that there? Probably not. Something arises, the first thing we do is we develop our feelings about it. And then we're off down that whole slippery slope, we could call it, to complete consciousness. So once again, I want to emphasize, if we can truly, truly perceive this emptiness of form, form is emptiness, then from that, we can extrapolate this and give ourselves that liberation that is so frequently talked about in all the teachings. Liberation from suffering. I was talking to one of my students the other day, and of course this is not an easy, if this was easy, then, you know, if this was instant coffee, then there'd be no need to sit around and contemplate or sit around and practice Zazen. But of course this is not easy. We grow up constantly adding layers onto our belief in this phenomena, this self. So I would suggest that you just look at the very first part of the Heart Sutra, form is emptiness, emptiness form. And just teach yourself over and over and over again. I have one of my folks is busy establishing that with everything that he encounters. And that's his practice for now. As long as he can keep looking at the table and even seeing the wood, where did the wood come from, the interconnectedness of that. It took, in fact, the whole cosmos to produce the universe, to produce this planet, to produce the trees that grew on the planet, and all the thousands of people involved in cutting the trees. So in other words, this wood could not be here without the involvement of so many other things. So once again, no inherent existence, no independent existence. Now, a good way to examine ourselves this way is ancestors. People that came before us. The glorious, glorious lineage that everyone is part of. Your mother, your father, your sisters, your brothers, your uncles, your grandparents, their grandparents, and their grandparents, and their grandparents. And when we think that way of all the things that it took to produce us, not to mention our conditioning and so forth, it would be very, very hard, I think, if we can spend time in contemplation of this. It would be very hard to think of ourselves as something separate, something independently existing. One other recommendation, apart from these books, if you're interested in this topic, and of course Zazen is our big teacher for this, is Chogyam Trungpa, who was a wonderful, wonderful teacher. Last year I was teaching in his place in Boulder, Colorado, great place. Anywho, he passed on, but his son Mipam now runs the Shambhala centers, or Shambhala. And I can highly recommend, if you want to investigate this a bit further, on YouTube, Mipam has a video. He teaches through doing performance videos and rap and different kinds of videos. It's really accessible. It's no longer your stuffy, you know, Buddhism that just stares at the wall. It's fun. So his video I highly recommend is called What About Me? And has anyone seen it? Yeah, a couple of folks. And it's just that if I could have brought it with me today and just played it for you all, I would have, because that's one of the best teachings on our focusing on self and how that can cause such suffering. And of course, his recommendation, instead of looking this way, is to look that way. And his whole teaching in the video was, well, what about you? Instead of, what about me? Will this make me happy? Will that make me happy? How about thinking about, what about you? What would make you happy? And Tuesday nights, everyone is invited to Q Sangha. And we put this into action at Q Sangha. For example, we have a cup of tea. As you know, that's a very important part of Zen training, is the cup of tea. But you're not allowed to get yourself a cup of tea. You have to find someone else that wants a cup of tea and get a cup of tea for them. So in your everyday actions, you can begin this to practice this, what about you? But of course, it starts off with disengaging from this, grasping on to what about me, what's going to make me happy today, what can I do today that's going to help me to feel better. And in that way we can really open up the hands, as Uchiyama Roshi says, open the hand of thought, not have the thought so completely focused here. Now, of course, this is not just lots of words, you know, that sound great but don't actually mean anything, because this is a here kind of practice, an in-the-body practice. And I was talking about this on Monday and, at the Zenkei Sangha. I was sitting on the floor and I said, you know, once we can realize, begin to unpack this, and begin to have that experience of emptiness, then we don't have to be dragged around by our emotions and our perceptions, you know, this is right, this is wrong, you know, we can just actually be with ourselves and be with other people. And someone said, well, wait a minute, are you in pain right now? And I said, let me check. Yeah, I'm in pain right now. And if I think about it right now, yeah, I'm in pain right now, which is what I said at the very beginning. But this is what I'm talking about not being dragged around. I don't feel miserable. Let's just be really down to earth. I don't feel miserable. I can feel the pain. It doesn't give rise to suffering because it's simply pain. It's simply a sensation. It doesn't have to be linked to anything else. So this is just a very concrete example of what I'm talking about. I'm not denying that there's some pain going on, but what I can affirm to you all is there's no suffering going on due to the pain. And usually it's very hard to break that connection. So again, what I'm recommending is have a look at this with what they call an open mind. You know, if you don't maybe agree with what you've been hearing right now, remember, first of all, who's talking and who's listening. But also remember Suzuki Roshi when he said, when you're listening to a Dharma talk, what you're usually doing, or listening to anybody talk, what you're usually doing is if the person says something that you agree with, you go, ah, she's right, she got it right there. And if the person says something that you disagree with, you go, that. She's wrong. No, that's not it. She's wrong. But in actual fact, as Suzuki Roshi says, if you listen to people talking that way, you don't actually hear what they're saying. It doesn't actually matter if it matches up with what you're thinking or not. After all, that's just thinking. So instead of just taking these as words and rejecting or taking them in, remember the Buddha always said, taste it for yourself. Have an experience of that. And if it doesn't fit your experience, then it doesn't fit. But don't reject upon hearing. Just try to accept. Now remember, accept does not mean approve. Just try to accept and give it a shot. So the next time when you're sitting down, practicing Zazen, see when that first, whatever it is, arises, that first thought, can you catch yourself attaching something to that right away? Can you catch yourself giving that reality? Because, you know, we have Manjushri with the sword cutting through. And what is it that is cutting through? It's that attachment. It's that belief that begins with the form, moves into the feelings, the perceptions, the formation. If in your Zazen practice you can be fierce, see the form, yes. Perhaps even see a feeling arising about that form. Can you leave it there? Now, of course, as I said earlier, it's not instant coffee. But that effort, that is where the effort can be very fruitful in Zazen. If something arises, can you leave it there? Or are you off? And of course, there's no wrong way to do this. There's no, oh damn, it went, you know, form, feeling, perception. I'm into formation and I didn't even realize it. That's not what's important. That actually is wonderful mindfulness practice. You saw what happened. So remember, it's very, very, very easy to beat ourselves up with this kind of thing. Oh, I should be able to just see that. Of course, I mean, it's written about in all these books. Form is emptiness, emptiness is form. We chant it every day in the Heart Sutra. Form is emptiness, emptiness is form. And it says right there in the first part, you know, relieves all suffering. And at the end it says, you know, this mantra relieves all suffering. But if it's just words, then it doesn't really affect our lives. And as you know, I don't have a temple. I work out there, so to speak. And there's a whole existence without much form going on. But there's a reason for that also, of course. Everybody has to be able to feel welcome to come in and be with us. And of course, if we're working on our very hard on our form, our belief systems, our perceptions, all of this that supposedly composes this, then we'll be able to be open to absolutely everyone, because we all know what it feels like to suffer from prejudgment, prejudice. And in fact, if you can work through this way, perception, boy, there's a great platform for judgment, isn't it? I perceive it this way, ergo I'm going to act towards it this way. So again, I would just say, try continually to unpack the form, emptiness, emptiness, form, because then you can begin to apply that outward, outward, outward. And then, instead of, I am sure that this person is such and such a way, the recommended question when you find a certainty in your head is, are you sure? Are you sure about that? And this is not to wander around, you know, caught up completely in doubting everything, but being able to develop the ability to be with everything. And usually what we're doing when we're judging, perceiving and so forth is separation. So being able to feel that connection and ending really, you know, that terrible feeling of isolation we can all get into. Well, how isolated can you actually be if you're conscious, if you're mindful of interconnectedness, for example? So I would like, I can't see a clock anywhere. I haven't even got my glasses on. I do want plenty of time for questions. Can anyone tell me? Oh, what a lovely t-shirt. See, that's my perception. Now, no one else would say that's a lovely t-shirt. It's got Scotland written on it. Can anyone tell me?
10:55.
There's time for questions.
Is it time? Okay, thank you, Neil. So if anyone would like to spring a question, observation, yes.
I just wanted to mention, I think in our recitation we left out Bodhisattva.
Yes.
Maybe you could work that into the no a little bit.
Yes, yes. Anyone want to give me a quick answer what a Bodhisattva is?
I just raised my hand. They did it in school too. It's kind of embarrassing.
Go on.
Maybe somebody else wants to.
Well, no one else raised their hand once again, Anne-Marie. So
my understanding is that it is someone who has achieved enlightenment but has vowed to stick around and help everybody else become awake too.
Well, close. And someone else can jump in again on this. I would say it's someone who's given or who has found the arising of the idea of liberation and vows to live their life to help other people. So not quite up as quite high and dazzling as that. But yes, Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. So in actual fact, this room is full of Bodhisattvas. Here we are, Bodhisattvas all. So any questions? Yes.
Sorry, just couldn't that definition in a way is sort of making a virtue of necessity, right? I mean, it's not like you could do something else.
Something else other than
right. If the thought of liberation arises, you're like, yeah, I'm going to take this to the bank and leave, right? And it's,
but you could just say, I want to be liberated. You could think that personal liberation is where it's at. I'll get that and no one else.
But then life would teach you something different fairly quickly, I hope.
One would hope. Remember, none of this is remember, none of this is one person sitting around thinking this up. These are probably centuries of experience. But it's very important that you have your experience of this. There's only one way to have this, and that's to really taste what's going on. Any other questions?
I sometimes am challenged when I'm thinking about this stuff around selflessness and the self. My experience has been sort of, I learned really early to sort of be a martyr.
Yeah.
And like people pleaser all my life. And as I'm sort of coming into myself now, I'm finding that I see what someone else might need, and I'm thinking about what I might need, and I'm putting that ahead of what they might need, in this sort of juggle to actually eventually help everybody. But it gets a little hairy for me around the no self.
Yes.
Because there was this other unhealthy sense of no self.
Right. Thank you. That's a great point, because when I first went into Zen practice, as some of you know, I was homeless and had extreme post-traumatic stress disorder. And when I first heard this teaching of, they were always saying, drop the self, drop the mind, and so forth. I didn't know myself. And it was actually very dangerous to me at that time to think of the idea of dropping myself. I had to first find out what that self actually was. Because remember, much as we're saying there's no inherent self, of course there's something sitting here. Of course there is. But I had to find out what that is first. And I'm thanking you again for raising that point, because a lot of people that I work with have post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, anxiety, or things like that. And often, folks don't have a very strong idea of self. So how could you possibly drop something without first thoroughly investigating it to find out what it is? So in actual fact, I did spend the first couple of years of practice trying to find out, because I too, growing up as a child who was abused, I too would do anything to please anyone. Now, you might not think that these days, but it was absolutely true. And everybody came before me, and that is not a healthy sense of no self. So first of all, I should have probably started off by saying that this is expressing compassion to yourself. It must come here first. A lot of us who are in the caring professions are very good at doing it this way. Here, let me help you. But remember, giving and receiving the same thing. We have to be able to receive. So thank you very much for bringing that point up. It's often seen as a gender division. Women are very connected and nurturing, and men have a strong sense of self. And we must also challenge that. That's another label. Many men do not have a great sense of self. And many women do not have a great sense of connection. So once again, labels, we must always be careful of putting ourselves and other people in boxes. My father used to say, we'll be in a box long enough. So once again, thank you so much for letting me be here and speak. And I'm happy to discuss this further, but remember, our practice is not an intellectual one. Please try to taste the truth of the first few lines of the Heart Sutra for yourself. And that's the only thing that really matters there. Of course, what that self is, you'll be investigating that too. So, thank you very much.
May our intention be